Chapter 5. Mr. Merton was very upset at the second postponement of the marriage. Sybil's mother, Lady Julia, had already ordered her dress for the wedding. She did everything in her power to convince Sybil to end the relationship. Although Sybil loved her mother dearly, nothing that Lady Julia could say would make her change her mind or lessen her faith in Lord Arthur. It took days for Lord Arthur to get over his terrible disappointment. His excellent common sense, however, soon asserted itself. His practical mind did not leave him in doubt about what to do. Poison had been a complete failure. Dynamite, or some other kind of explosive, was obviously the proper thing to try. He reviewed his list of friends and relatives again. After careful consideration, he decided to blow up his uncle, the Dean of Chichester. The Dean, who was a man of great culture and learning, loved clocks. He had a wonderful collection of them, dating from the 15th century to the present. It seemed to Lord Arthur that his uncle's hobby offered him an excellent opportunity to carry out his plan. The question was where to find an explosive machine. The London Directory didn't have any information on the subject. Suddenly, he thought of his friend, Count Ruvalov, a young Russian of revolutionary tendencies. They had met at Lady Windermere's in the winter. Ruvalov was writing a book about the life of Peter the Great, and apparently he had come to England to study documents about the Tsar's stay in this country. It was generally suspected that he was an anarchist agent. There was no doubt that the Russian embassy wasn't happy about his presence in London. Lord Arthur felt that he was the perfect man for his plans. He drove to his apartment in Bloomsbury one morning to ask for his advice and assistance.
"So you are entering politics?" asked Count Ruvalov,
when Lord Arthur told him his intentions. Lord Arthur was forced to admit that he had no interest in social issues. He wanted the explosive machine for a purely family matter. No one was involved in this but himself. Count Ruvalov looked at him for some moments. Then, seeing that he was quite serious, he wrote an address on a piece of paper, initialed it, and gave it to Lord Arthur across the table.
"Scotland Yard would give a lot to know this address, my dear fellow."
"They won't have it," cried Lord Arthur, laughing. After shaking the young Russian's hand warmly, he ran downstairs, examined the paper, and told his driver to take him to Soho Square. Once there, he walked down Greek Street until he came to a place called Bayle's Court. He passed under the archway and found himself in a curious little square. He walked to the end and knocked on a little green door. After a few minutes, the door was opened by a foreigner. He asked Lord Arthur in very bad English what his business was. Lord Arthur gave him Count Ruvalov's paper. When the man saw it, he bowed and invited Lord Arthur into a room on the ground floor. A few minutes later, Herr Winkelkopf appeared in the room. He had a wine-stained napkin around his neck and a fork in his left hand. "Count Ruvalov has given me an introduction to you," said Lord Arthur, bowing. "I am anxious to have a short interview with you on a matter of business. My name is Smith, Mr. Robert Smith. I want you to supply me with an explosive clock."
"Charmed to meet you, Lord Arthur," said the little German, laughing. "Don't look so alarmed. It is my duty to know everybody. I remember seeing you one evening at Lady Windermere's. I hope her ladyship is quite well. Do you mind sitting with me while I finish my breakfast? I have an excellent pâté and a very good Rhine wine in the back."
Before Lord Arthur had recovered from his surprise at being recognized, he found himself sitting at the breakfast table, sipping a delicious glass of wine.
"If you want an explosive clock for home use," said Herr Winkelkopf, "I can supply you with an excellent article. I guarantee that you will be satisfied with the result. May I ask for whom it is intended? If it is for the police, or for anyone at Scotland Yard, I am afraid that I can't do anything for you. The English detectives are really our best friends. As they are so stupid, we can do exactly what we like. I don't want to lose even one of them."
"I assure you," said Lord Arthur, "that it has nothing to do with the police. The clock is for the Dean of Chichester."
"Dear me! I had no idea that you felt so strongly about religion, Lord Arthur. Few men do these days."
"I'm afraid that you overestimate me, Herr Winkelkopf," said Lord Arthur, blushing. "The fact is that I know nothing about theology."
"Oh, it is purely a private matter, then."
"Purely private." Herr Winkelkopf nodded and left the room. He returned in a few minutes with a small round piece of dynamite and a pretty little French clock. Lord Arthur smiled when he saw it. "That is exactly what I want," he said. "How does it explode?"
"Ah, that is my secret," answered Herr Winkelkopf. "Tell me when you wish it to explode, and I will set the machine to the moment."
"I think that Friday at noon would be the perfect time," said Lord Arthur. "The Dean is always home at that hour."
"Friday at noon," repeated Herr Winkelkopf.
He made himself a note with that information. "And now," said Lord Arthur, rising from his seat, "please tell me how much I owe you."
"It is such a small thing, Lord Arthur, that I shall not charge you anything. I am pleased to be able to do a favour for a friend of Count Ruvaloff."
"But your effort, Herr Winkelkopf."
"Oh, that is nothing. It is a pleasure for me. I do not work for money. I live entirely for my art."
Lord Arthur thanked the little German for his kindness, left the house, and went to the park. He was in a state of great excitement for the next 2 days. On Friday at 12, he drove to the Buckingham Club to wait for the news. All afternoon, telegrams continuously arrived from various parts of the country to inform people about the results of horse races, the verdicts in divorces, and the state of the weather. At 4 o'clock, the afternoon newspapers arrived. Lord Arthur disappeared into the library with the Pall Mall, the St. James's, the Globe, and the Echo. None of the papers contained any mention of Chichester. Lord Arthur thought that the attempt must have failed. It was a terrible disappointment to him. Herr Winkelkopf, whom he went to see the next day, was full of elaborate apologies. He offered to give him another clock, free of charge, or a box of nitroglycerin bombs at cost price. But Lord Arthur had lost all faith in explosives. The little German admitted that something must have gone wrong with the machinery. Hope was not lost, however. There was still a chance that the clock would explode. Lord Arthur was a little consoled by this reflection. Unfortunately, he was destined for disappointment. 2 days later, as he was going upstairs, his mother called him into her study. She showed him a letter that she had just received from the deanery.
"Your cousin Jane writes charming letters," she said. "You really must read this one. It's as good as a novel."
Lord Arthur took the letter from her hands. It read as follows. "The Deanery, Chichester, the 27th of May. My dearest aunt, we have had great fun with a clock that an unknown admirer sent Papa last Thursday. It arrived in a wooden box from London. Papa put it in the library. We were all sitting there on Friday when the clock struck 12. We heard a funny noise, and a little puff of smoke came from the clock figure. The little statue on top of the clock fell off and broke its nose on the floor. It looked so ridiculous that James and I screamed with laughter. When we examined it, we discovered that it was a sort of alarm clock, and that if you set it to a particular time and put some gunpowder under a hammer, it went off whenever you wanted. Papa said it must not remain in the library because it made a noise. Reggie has it in the schoolroom. It does nothing but give small explosions all day long. Do you think Arthur would like one for a wedding present? Reggie has just had another explosion, so Papa has ordered the clock to be sent to the stables. I don't think Papa likes it as much as he did at first, although he is very honoured that someone sent him such a pretty and ingenious toy. Papa sends his love, as do James and Reggie. I hope that Uncle Cecil's gout is better. Your affectionate niece, Jane Percy. Lord Arthur looked so serious and unhappy about the letter that his mother started laughing uncontrollably.
"My dear Arthur," she cried, "I shall never show you a young lady's letter again. But what shall I say about the clock? I think it is a wonderful invention and would like to have one myself."
"I don't like the idea very much," said Lord Arthur with a sad smile. He kissed his mother and left the room. When he got upstairs, he sat down heavily on a sofa and his eyes filled with tears. He had done his best to commit this murder. He had failed on both occasions, through no fault of his own. He had tried to do his duty, but it seemed as if destiny herself had turned traitor. Perhaps it would be better to cancel the marriage completely. It was true that Sybil would suffer, but suffering could not really affect a nature as noble as hers. As for himself, what did it matter? There is always some war in which a man can die. There is always a cause to which a man can give his life. Since life had no pleasure for him, death had no terror. At 7:30, he dressed and went to the club. He was obliged to have dinner with his brother, Lord Surbiton, and a party of young men. Their trivial conversation did not interest him. When coffee came, he invented an excuse to get away from them. He walked down to the Thames and sat by the river for hours. At 2:00, he got up and walked towards Blackfriars. How unreal everything looked! It was like a strange dream. The huge dome of St. Paul's looked like a bubble in the night air. As he approached Cleopatra's Needle, he saw a man leaning over the railing, looking at the river. As he came nearer, the man looked up. The street light illuminated his face. It was Mr. Podgers, the palm reader. No one could mistake the fat face, the eyeglasses, the sickly, weak smile. Lord Arthur stopped. A brilliant idea occurred to him. He approached him silently from behind. In a moment, he had grabbed Mr. Podgers and thrown him into the Thames. There was a curse, a heavy splash, and silence. Lord Arthur looked at the river anxiously. He could see nothing of the palm reader, except for his hat, floating in the moonlit water. After a time, it also sank. At one point, Lord Arthur thought that he saw a fat figure going towards the staircase by the bridge. A horrible feeling of failure possessed him, but it was merely the reflection of a cloud in the water. At last, he seemed to have complied with the decree of destiny. Sybil's name came to his lips.
"Have you dropped anything, sir?"
said a voice behind him suddenly. He turned and saw a policeman. "Nothing of importance, officer," he answered, smiling. Seeing a passing taxi carriage, he jumped in and told the man to drive to Belgrave Square. For the next few days, he alternated between hope and fear. There were moments when he almost expected Mr. Podgers to walk into the room. There were other times when he felt that fate could not be so unkind to him. Twice he went to the palm reader's address in West Moon Street, but he couldn't ring the bell. He wanted certainty and was afraid of it. Finally, it came. He was sitting in the smoking room of the club having tea when the waiter came in with the evening newspapers. He took the St. James's. He was turning the pages quickly when this strange title caught his attention. Suicide of a Palm Reader. He turned pale with excitement and read. Yesterday morning, at 7 o'clock, the body of Mr. Septimus R. Podgers, the eminent palm reader, was found on the Greenwich shore, directly in front of the Ship Hotel. The gentleman had been missing for several days. Considerable anxiety for his safety had been felt in palm reading circles. The official verdict is that he committed suicide. He had been under the influence of a temporary mental problem, probably caused by overwork. He was 65 and does not seem to have any family. Lord Arthur ran out of the club with the newspaper still in his hand and drove directly to Park Lane. Sybil saw him from the window. Something told her that he was bringing good news. She ran down to meet him, and when she saw his face, she knew that all was well.
"My dear Sybil," cried Lord Arthur, "let us be married tomorrow." "Oh, you silly boy, the cake is not even ordered," said Sybil, laughing through her tears.